I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Governor Bob Ferguson signs a bunch of bad bills into law, including upending parental rights, but not before getting a visit from an unexpected person. Plus, speaking of Ferguson, remember that promise he made on the campaign trail to give $100 million to law enforcement agencies to help hire additional cops? Well, it turns out it was a complete farce. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. Right now, we're trying to add 300 new paid subscribers over the next 30 days. You can help us do that by signing up and using the promo code 300, that's the number 300, at patreon.com/undivided. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I've been laughing all morning. I've been dying. I'm dead. I'm officially dead. Funniest thing I've seen probably all year long. And we're going to talk about a lot of depressing things happening in Washington State and things that Governor Bob Ferguson signed into law. So I thought we'd start with something fun. We've been following the saga around parental rights in our state now for some time. We were very active in trying to help Let's Go Washington collect signatures to make sure that parents know what's happening with their kids at school. That was what the Parental Rights Initiative was all about. It's basically saying, hey, why are we keeping secrets from parents? Why are we, in the name of radical gender ideology, you know, letting kids go to school and identify as a different gender or whatever it is, or get connected to gender hormone therapy and not just tell parents? You know, and that wasn't the only issue at play. Also had to do with behavioral issues at school, curriculum, etc. And so this was a no-brainer. It had support right, left, and center. Democrats decided, as you know, to sign the Parental Rights Initiative into law last year rather than see it go to voters, because they knew that voters would pass it. So they're like, let's sign it into law, and then we'll come back next year. And if we're the ones who signed it into law, then we can upend it. And that's exactly what they did via House Bill 1296. So it's a slap in the face to voters. It's completely undermining democracy. And it's just weird, to use a word that Democrats really love. It's weird to keep secrets from parents. It's a strange thing to do. Yet they're obsessed with it. So they'll go to the lengths of upending a voter initiative to continue to keep doing it. And it's because their buddies and key donors at the teachers union want to be able to do whatever they want in their classrooms without oversight from parents. And so Democrats do whatever the teachers union tells them to do. So Bob Ferguson has a bill signing today in his office to sign the bill upending the Parental Rights Initiative into law. And Nicole, it's so funny. Nicole's editing it, or she's watching it this morning, and our desks are like back to back, and all I hear go, oh, Brandi, look at this. I'm like, what? And I turn around and she goes, look who just crashed the bill signing. Watch.
You should be on my right
okay.
side because
yep,
you're fine, right? I got everything
yep.
right. Yep.
In case you're just wonderful. Listening and not watching, Tim Iman just walks in the door, goes right behind the lectern
yep,
where Bob Ferguson's
sure.
going to
hey,
be
on
speaking.
In, everybody. Thanks so much for being here.
If you don't know what Tim looks like, he's got that.
We got a big crowd. I love it. Thanks
it
so much, everybody. Come on.
Bob
in.
Notices
come
him.
In.
Oh my God.
How are you?
Yeah, no.
Are you,
you know,
are you really
let's
gonna
get folks
Tim,
in the
Tim,
front?
I'm just standing here in respectful opposition.
Yeah, but let's get some
opposition.
Students in the front.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, let's make sure we get room for the students.
Absolutely. Right this way.
Claire Wilson is pissed.
Got it.
Okay.
So, hey.
They let him stay.
First, thanks to everybody who's here today and all the hard work that you put in this legislation over a long period of time. And just so appreciate that.
I'm dead. Oh my God, the ultimate troll. So if you're not familiar with Tim Iman, of course, he used to run a bunch of initiatives until then Attorney General Bob Ferguson personally sued him into oblivion to stop him from engaging in that kind of activity. He was the one behind $30 car tabs multiple times. And basically they politically went after him to undercut him and tried to ruin his life. So Tim Iman, of course, because he's been pushing back against what is a blatant attack on the initiative process, he just what squirrels his way in to the governor's office for a bill signing, stands right behind Bob Ferguson for the entirety of it. I'm actually shocked Bob didn't like sick his state patrol security to get him out. and doesn't interrupt or anything, just stands there looking glum. Crazy. I was laughing so hard. And you just see Senator Claire Wilson, who was the Democrat on in the Senate, who helped drive this this bill through. She is just, here, can we play that little part again with Claire Wilson? She is just beside herself. Cannot believe he would do this.
Come on.
Yeah, let's make sure we get room for the students.
Absolutely. Got it.
Bob is not just
stressed.
Oh my God. It gives me so much joy. Usually I don't like little things like that. And it's like, okay, be above that. No. They go high, we go low. We go low. Only because they've gone low this whole time. Look at what they're doing. They don't deserve to sign that in peace. I mean, I don't want any violence or anything. I mean, peacefully. And Bob was clearly perturbed the entire time because he's got Tim Iman breathing over his shoulder. And then Tim went and got a pen. So he took home one of the pens from the signing. Just insane. So I thought we'd start with that a little bit of video. Hilarious. But, of course, what happened today is devastating for parents. It's devastating for families. It's further proof that the Democratic Party in Washington State has completely radicalized. It wants to destroy the nuclear family. It doesn't want parental involvement in schools because parental involvement means parental oversight. And they can't have more oversight because they don't want people to know what's happening in our public school system, which clearly isn't academic. Because our test scores are in the toilet, our enrollment is in the toilet, our attendance is in the toilet. The only thing they're exceeding at is transitioning little children to different genders and convincing them that, you know, they should be future Democratic voters and donors to Planned Parenthood or whatever it is. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. That's literally what's happening in our public school system. But, of course, Democrats, as I said, answer to the teachers union, and they've lied about this every step of the way. Oh, this isn't about undermining parents. No, parents are important. This is just about making sure that we're protecting students. We're protecting your kids from you, right? Here's Bob Ferguson talking about 1296.
House Bill 1296 protects the safety and privacy of Washington's K-12 students. It requires public school districts, charter schools, and state tribal education compact schools to protect student safety and privacy while ensuring access to a discrimination-free learning environment. To support this goal, it includes a statement of student rights and clarifies parent and guardian notifications under existing law, including restrictions related to health care and counseling information. It also adds ethnicity, homelessness, immigration or citizenship status, and neurodivergence as protected classes under public school non-discrimination provisions in state law, and clarifies protections for sexual orientation, gender expression, and gender identity. Finally, it directs the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction to set up a process to investigate complaints of school districts that may fail to comply and take corrective action when violations are found. The top priority for our schools must be to ensure a safe learning environment where every student has the chance to thrive.
Yeah, the top priority for schools should be education, right? Of course, we want kids to be safe, but your idea of kids being safe is allowing them to be indoctrinated in a liberal bubble and then not allowing their parents to intervene or even know what's going on. It's really gross stuff, actually. Every parent, right, left, and center, it's not a controversial concept to say, hey, you know, not only is our money funding public education, so our money per pupil, I think it's up to like $19,000 per pupil. So we're being taxed to high heaven to fund public education, whether we have kids or not. They're going there. They're not getting a quality education anymore. But at the very least, if you're a parent and you're sending your child to public school, you ought to know what's happening there. And there shouldn't be any sort of pushback when a parent asks for curriculum. There shouldn't be any pushback when a parent asks for supplemental lessons that were taught in their kid's class. There shouldn't be any pushback when a parent says, hey, is Tom coming to school and being called Tammy and being referred to as a girl by teachers and students, because I should know that. It's not controversial stuff. It's really disgusting that this is the thing they're hanging their hat on. Representative Monica Stonier, a Democrat from the House, was a sponsor of this on the House side. She spoke about, of course, that we're all, I'm lying. Everybody else is just lying about what they're doing.
You know, there's a lot of controversy around this policy, but you can see by the people who are standing here that the young people in our schools deserve a place where they can be seen and acknowledged in their full selves and experience a full curriculum, one that is diverse, that reflects the true history and the experiences of people who live in this state. And to be able to experience a school system without discrimination is top top-notch priority for the teachers in this state, myself being one, and I know Claire, Senator Wilson has done a lot of work over the decades with young people who also deserve this type of learning experience. And this bill is an example of how the rights of our students and their presence and their experiences can coexist with the parental rights that are also listed in the policies.
Can't coexist. You tell me, besides Tim Iman, is there one conservative parent there? Is there one moderate parent there? No, you're building schools in a school environment that will be comfortable and popular with a small segment of the left. And I just noticed it. I don't have a screenshot of it, but, you know, she's referencing, you know, given the people in the room, and there's a couple teenagers who clearly look like transgender. And the one standing right off to her right has a shirt on. It says abortion, racial justice, reproductive rights, trans rights. I think it's a Planned Parenthood shirt or something like that. So, I mean, that gives you an indication of who they invited to the bill signing, besides Tim Iman. He crashed it, of course. And what they want our schools to be. It's ideology first, and then academics is like somewhere near the bottom. And the proof of this also is we played the clips, was it last week or Monday? I don't even remember anymore. Was it yesterday or Monday? I don't know. The Washington Education Association met in Spokane, and their president of the teachers union gave this speech. Didn't talk about academics. Basically, orange man bad, radical gender ideology, offering, you know, educational outcomes based on race. It's insane. So what happens from here? I know a lot of you signed the Parental Rights Initiative, helped us in our efforts, and Let's Go Washington and their efforts to gather nearly half a million signatures just for the legislature to upend it. It's very frustrating. Let's Go Washington, of course, which was behind that initiative, put out a statement. Brian Haywood said, "Believe me when I say we will do everything in our power to repeal this horrible gutting of the original parental rights bill. Governor Ferguson and his majority party are on the wrong side of this battle. They have shown Washington state families and parents their true colors, and that's something they can't take back." It's part of it, though, is helping Washington families and parents see that. We talk all the time about people who aren't so politically active or connected who are going to believe what they hear on the news. And I guarantee you tonight, let's watch the 5 o'clock news. You watch it too. Flip between channels. You see how they articulate this and how they, you know, they will share the Democratic Party line that this isn't about taking anything from parents. We're protecting kids. And it's about equality and equity, not equality, equity. And it's about inclusion. And we're doing the right thing. So it's really, really hard to wake up parents and families who are, you know, focusing on their lives and raising kids and maybe not paying attention or thinking, you know, going to the lengths that you guys do to think for yourselves and really dissect these policies. So it is a war of information. We're absolutely in an information war. And I want, look, you don't even have to listen to me. Go read the Parental Rights Initiative and go read 1296 in their entirety. Listen to the speeches that happened on the floor. Listen to the focus on gender ideology and equity and race and all of that. And you tell me what you think it's about. It's not about educational outcomes. It's not about helping parents stay involved in their kids' education. It's about helping a certain subset of parents who have trans children and helping children who are transgender and making sure that they can do whatever they want to do, however they want to do it, and have parents who disagree cut out of their lives. That's what it's about. It's absolutely ridiculous. So speaking of just doing what the teachers union tells them to do, Bob Ferguson has also turned around and signed pay for striking workers. Washington is now only the third state in the nation to extend unemployment insurance benefits to people who willingly go on strike from their jobs. We join New York and New Jersey. This policy was so extreme that even California Governor Gavin Newsom vetoed it when they passed it down there. So, I mean, New York, New Jersey, big union states, you know, Washington is as well. But this is an insane thing, especially when our unemployment insurance system has been stretched so thin, you know, coming out of COVID and all of that. It's supposed to help people who lose their jobs through no fault of their own, like a layoff. Gosh, you know, I was working, I was gainfully employed, and now all of a sudden I don't have a job and I have a family to feed. Well, you get a few weeks of unemployment benefits to help you out during that difficult time. And I think that's something a lot of people agree with, right? But now we're going to say for the teachers union, and that's what this is about. This is a wish list item from the teachers union, which are the which is the biggest donor to Democrats and keeps Democrats in office. It's the most powerful entity in the state and probably more powerful than the governor himself. So what they want goes, which is so disgusting and ridiculous. And so now they're going to get to go on strike, which they will do. This takes effect January 1st. So not this year. But you better believe the second this takes effect, we're going to have strikes in the healthcare industry. We're going to have, I mean, for sure, teacher strikes in. So that'll be 2026. September 2026, make plans now to have childcare, a backup childcare option. Because absolutely, the teachers unions will wait until a couple weeks before the school year begins. And they will now use this leverage to get massive pay raises that school districts cannot afford, but they'll have to find the money from somewhere, or your kids aren't going back to school. They're not going back to school. Here's Bob Ferguson. This isn't a handout to the union. This is leveling the playing field.
Allowing striking workers to access unemployment insurance benefits creates a more level playing field for workers to have the resources they need to effectively bargain for better working conditions.
Insane. How does that level a playing field? When you, first of all, I don't know if he's referring to leveling the playing field with their employers while they're considering striking, or if he's talking about leveling the playing field with other workers who are unemployed, because that doesn't level the playing field with them. They lost their jobs. You're choosing to leave your job. Not to mention that these unions have hundreds of millions of dollars in strike funds. Now, the strike funds don't give them the entirety of the pay they're losing out on, but it gives them something. They collect dues and have strike funds for just such an occasion. But the thing is that one strike depletes those strike funds. They want to strike every year. The teachers union is going to strike every single year. And they're going to say, it's for the kids, as they do every time. We're striking for the kids. We want higher pay for ourselves. And that's helping the kids, you know? It's absolutely insane for him to suggest. And you know, the way prior to this bill and this going into law, you know, he talks about a level playing field. Both the employer and the striking workers have a reason to get to the bargaining table right now, as it exists, because this law, again, doesn't take effect for 7 more months. Because the employer needs their workers back. They need their workers on the job. So there's a big incentive there for them, right? In some of these industries, I mean, they can't afford to have people on the picket line. So they already have a huge incentive to come to the bargaining table. What was the incentive for workers? Well, because they weren't getting paid. Strike funds would run out. So they'd have to come to the bargaining table and bargain in good faith. Well, now, level the playing field? You haven't leveled the playing field. You've put your boot on it in favor of the unions. It's absolutely an insane policy. Even Gavin Newsom thought so before Gavin Newsom suddenly pretended to be a moderate. He vetoed it when he was still progressive. Now he's, of course, pretending to be a moderate. But even when he wasn't, he's like, yeah, I can't do that. We got to veto that. What a slap in the face to people who are out there gainfully employed, who lose their jobs and have to rely on that system. You know the other thing? You know the other thing about this bill? So if you lose your job, you're laid off today, let's say, and you get into the state's unemployment insurance system, you have to prove, as you should, that you're out there looking for work. You can't just sit at home on the couch living off the government teat. You have to prove that you're out there, you know, engaging in interviews and seeking employment. You know who doesn't? The union workers, who now are gifted these unemployment benefits. There is no requirement for them while they're on the picket line to be out there actively seeking employment. So this is special treatment for them. Not only is it special treatment in the sense that they should never get unemployment benefits for walking off the job intentionally, but while you get laid off and you're out there busting your ass trying to find a new job because you have to get the unemployment benefits to come in, and you want to because you don't want to be unemployed. No, this gives them the cushion they need to just keep walking the picket line. They don't even have to look for new work. It's insane. It's insane. I don't know how anybody tolerates this in the state of Washington, but too many people do. All right. Not a particular surprise, but Governor Bob Ferguson also signed. And in case you're wondering why so much of this is happening this week, today is the deadline. In fact, put out a text and a feeler trying to figure out what's going on with the budget. So Bob Ferguson, this is the last day he can sign the, you know, almost $80 billion budget into law. I've heard it might happen later today, but he hasn't put out any sort of big announcement. So maybe he's going to do it quietly because he doesn't want to be on camera signing the largest tax increase in state history into law. So today is a deadline for him to either sign all of these things, veto them, or else, you know, just let them go into law without his signature on them. So he signed today permit to purchase a firearm, which is not a surprise, as we've said. We knew, and I think 2A advocates knew from the second that this was introduced, this would sail through the House and the Senate, and it would wind up on the governor's desk. And Bob Ferguson spent the majority of his time as attorney general eroding Second Amendment rights. So, of course, he made a big deal. This is the one with the baby, right? Good grief. I don't know the backstory, so I won't roll my eyes quite yet, but this is him talking about common sense permit to purchase.
Gun violence in Washington state breaks apart too many families and kills too many children. I've met with families over the years that have gone through the most terrible loss possible as a result of gun violence. We must put common sense reforms into place that save lives.
Yeah, and look, I don't know if that's the family member of someone who passed away because of gun violence, probably something like that. So I'm not going to judge them for being there. But you've got, you know, this continued lie that the policies they're pushing through are going to reduce gun violence. Sort of like a baby there as a political prop is what it looked like and felt like, which just isn't true. And how do we know that's not true? Well, because we have more gun violence today than we've ever had in Washington state, at least in the last 20 years. And yet we have stricter gun control policies than we've ever had before. So that doesn't seem like it's working. And 2A advocates have said that's not going to work. All you're doing is restricting law-abiding gun owners further. You're doing nothing to get guns out of the hands of criminals who are account for the, you know, the gang members, the bulk of the people who are engaging in shootings and accounting for individual instances of shots fired by far. It's like, it's not even close. And of course, like when you look at homicides, the homicides committed with a handgun versus a assault weapon of war, like also not even close, but they go after the big scary things. So they can get the headlines. So it's just insane. So now you, as a law abiding, you know, person, you're going to have to wait maybe even 2 months to buy a firearm in the state of Washington. It doesn't go into effect until, I believe, early or late 2027, while they get all the infrastructure in place to do this. You're going to have to go, even if you've been shooting guns for 30 years, you'll have to go to a gun range and do live fire training to be able to purchase a gun. That's nuts. It already takes like 2 weeks in the state of Washington. I just bought my first handgun a couple months ago. I was like, holy smokes, they really want you to give up. I was like, this whole system is designed for you just to walk away without a gun. So, you know, it'll be challenged, obviously, but we all know how long that can take. And we know our courts here in Washington are ideologically captured. So, you know, they're going to say that this doesn't restrict your Second Amendment rights. You know, it just puts some reasonable common sense safeguards in place. Like, what is that going to do? They're like, oh, this will stop someone, you know, increasing the waiting period will stop someone who has their mind set on doing something horrible. Okay, what about the gang members out there slinging stolen guns who are doing something horrible today? Because all your other policies encourage them to continue to shoot people and kill people. And you don't seem to be doing anything about that. In fact, you're making it worse. I mean, what was one of the bills they introduced this year to reduce sentencing enhancements for people who actually pick up a gun and use it in the commission of a crime? Let's take it easy on them. And also wanted to reduce sentencing enhancements for adult gang members who recruit juvenile gang members to commit crimes on their behalf, usually with a firearm. I think of the Tara Simmons bill that the only purpose of it was to reduce punishments for drive-by shooters who murder someone. So you're actively reducing punishments for criminals who use guns in the name of equity because more of them happen to be black? But you claim you care about gun violence and you want to save kids' lives and all of this, and then you restrict otherwise law-abiding gun owners? What's the point? I mean, just say, I don't know, just come out and say it, like, because it's so transparent what you're trying to do. And I've always said, if you want to get rid of the Second Amendment and you think it's antiquated for today's times, do it. Try it. There's a reason there's a path to amend the Constitution, because our founding fathers probably realized, hey, some of this stuff like on slavery or the quartering of troops or whatever it is, you know, might not be relevant in 200 years. We should give them the ability to change it, but we should make it very, very difficult to do so. But nobody wants to try to embark on that endeavor. Probably because they don't think it'll be successful. So instead, they just, you know, take away, they make it look like Swiss cheese, your Second Amendment rights. And they make it so difficult, and difficult not only to own a firearm, but to sell them. Look at all the laws that they've passed in recent years directed at FFLs that make it so expensive they can't even operate a shop. So there's just like, okay, if we can't get rid of the Second Amendment, let's make it impossible to exercise your Second Amendment rights without breaking the law. Wild stuff. Did you have something you wanted to say, Nicole? You look like you have a breaking news insert.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I think he's signing both bills, the transportation and the operating at 3 in 3 the Capitol.
Yeah, okay. So he does want to be on camera putting his... I wonder if he has any line item vetoes. My gut told me that he was probably going to come out and say, well, I'm vetoing... Well, first of all, he'll say, they first came to me with $20 billion in new taxes, and I told them no. And then they came back with $14 billion in new taxes, and I told them no. So he's going to set it up. And that was probably the plan all along, because that's how you negotiate, right? Like, hey, ask for $20 billion. So he's going to come out, act like he saved us all a bunch of money. But he didn't. He's going to sign the largest tax increase in state history into law his very first year in office. And it's our job to make sure that that follows him every year, every month, every week, every day, every hour, every minute, and to try to make sure he never gets a second term in office. Outrageous. Whether he'll line item some things and say, you know, I'm gonna, and he'll make a bigger deal out of it. It'll be something small. I'm vetoing this and this and this because, you know, times are tough for Washington families, and it'll amount to virtually nothing. Pennies, pennies. Outrageous. All right. I actually saved the most outrageous thing that's pissing me off the most today for our next segment. You remember Bob Ferguson's big promise of, oh, I love cops and I love public safety and I'm going to give out $100 million in grants to hire additional law enforcement officers. Sounded nice, right? Well, it turns out it was a complete lie, a farce, a sham. We'll discuss coming up next. First, our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com has been in the real estate game in the state of Washington for a long time. He knows the market like the back of his hand, and he is the guy to go to if you're looking to sell your home. Start, first of all, by going to sellwithwes.com using their free home value calculator. You just plug in your address, helps you understand how much your home might be worth, and then Wes can give you a free market analysis. So he'll just talk to you, give you an assessment of how the market is looking, how other homes in your area have been performing, and then, of course, what he thinks he can do to make sure you get top dollar for your home, which is what all of us want, of course. Gone are the days where you can just list a burned down shack for $1 million in Washington. You do have to put some work into it now. But, you know, it is a seller's market. There's a lot of pent up demand still. So Wes can help you out every step of the way. His communication, marketing, all of that top notch. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. I am going to take responsibility for this one. You can put the responsibility for our lack of understanding of what this bill really was on my shoulders, because I've talked about it a lot and apparently didn't do my due diligence to look into it enough to realize that it was just a scam. It was a complete, complete farce. So Bob Ferguson, of course, came out on the campaign trail in his inaugural address everywhere, and he said, my biggest priority, my campaign promise to you is that I want to get $100 million in the budget to go toward new police officers. And that's how he sold it. That's how he sold it the entire time. But it turns out that's not what the bill does at all. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration, Lord knows we've got it, into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter. So just as a reminder, one of Bob Ferguson's very first ads when he was running for governor was this one.
50th, dead last. Washington has the lowest number of law enforcement officers per capita of any state. That's unacceptable. As governor, I'll fix it.
Yeah, okay. As governor, I'll fix it. Well, what are you going to do? Now, I said after that ad, after he made the same promise in his inaugural address, that this is not a problem you can throw money on. We didn't get to this position overnight where people don't want to be a cop in Washington state. It took years and years of degrading our law enforcement professionals, Bob Ferguson and his office politically prosecuting police officers for murder, Seattle and the rest of the progressives around the state pushing police defunding. It took a very long time to get to a place where the city of Seattle is 600 to 700 officers short, so much so they're having press conferences to celebrate when they hire one plus officer in a whole year. Like, oh, this is the first year we've hired more officers than have left. One, you know? So things are bad. And I've said that respect is the biggest currency that's going to get us out of this situation. Making law enforcement officers believe and truly having their back and respecting the difficult job that they do, and not using your power and influence and lawmaking ability to hinder their ability to keep our communities safe. It doesn't mean you let them go out there and run rampant, right? There have to be some regulations and rules and expectations. And nobody disagrees with that. But the vilification has to stop. And also, we have to have leaders with a track record of not vilifying officers, of having their back. Bob Ferguson blows with the wind. One day he's prosecuting unsuccessfully police officers for murder. The next day he's running a campaign ad as governor saying that he's going to help hire more cops. And we called it, you guys called it too, all along. It's like, no, he'll leave office. We'll still be last in the nation for police officers per capita. But he made the promise anyway. And at the end of the day, if you're a police officer and you're going to work in a state like Washington that doesn't respect you, you might as well get more money, right? So on the surface, fine. I don't believe Bob Ferguson. I don't believe he respects law enforcement. But if he wants to set aside $100 billion in the budget to be able to bring more law enforcement officers into our communities, which we desperately need, then by all means, I guess, let's just understand who it's coming from. So the vessel for that policy was House Bill 2015 to actually push through the policy and the grant program, what it will look like, what the requirements will be. So Bob signed that law into law today. And of course, he used it to take a victory lap on fulfilling a key campaign promise. Here he is this morning.
In my inaugural address, I made a promise that this legislative session, we must provide significant funding to hire more law enforcement officers in our state. We rank last, 50th per capita in number of law enforcement officers. That needs to change. I pledge to work with both sides of the aisle to ensure this critical funding made it through the legislature. I'm so pleased to have House Bill 2015 before me now to help address this situation.
Okay. So, again, if you are a passive news consumer, what have you heard? You've heard Bob make this promise on the campaign trail. You've heard Bob make this promise during his inaugural address. And you'll probably hear on the evening news tonight, Bob giving a speech, patting himself on the back with a few uniformed members of law enforcement around him. So that's what you'll hear as a passive news consumer. And so what will you believe then as a passive news consumer? Well, you'll believe that Bob Ferguson supports law enforcement. He wants our communities to be more safe. And he's helped get $100 million to hire more police officers. Only to find out that that's not true. That's not what the bill does. In fact, we have now learned, and again, I take blame for this. I don't know why I didn't know this sooner, because I mean, I've been harping on this already, but I would have been harping on it to a much larger extent for the past few months. So it turns out that the way this grant program is structured, there is no guarantee in it that even a penny of the $100 million goes to hiring police officers. Listen to me sound like I'm surprised. Listen to me sound like I'm surprised. This is the problem, Brandy. Why are you surprised? You should have been skeptical to begin with. So the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs was the first sort of indication that I got that this wasn't what it was being sold as. So they put out in a press release, I'll just read part of it for you. While we recognize the positive elements of House Bill 2015, it is not, quote, $100 million for law enforcement hiring. In its final form and after many revisions, it would actually allow the full $100 million to be spent without hiring a single new officer. If a community chooses to implement a local sales tax increase allowed by this bill, hiring may include not only law enforcement officers and behavioral health professionals, but also devote funds to emergency management planning, environmental hazard mitigation, security personnel, community outreach and assistance programs, alternative response programs, and mental health crisis response. The legislation also requires applicants to comply with reporting and training programs that have not even been implemented by the state. So I saw that and I said, what? How did I miss that? So I looked back at the bill, and as they said, there's been a lot of revisions in the legislature. So in Gross Substitute House Bill 2015, indeed, if you read the whole thing, So it says it's a grant program for the purpose of providing direct support to local and tribal law enforcement agencies in hiring, retaining, and training law enforcement officers, peer counselors, and behavioral health personnel working in co-response to increase community policing and public safety. Peer counselors? Look, I'm not saying there's not a place for peer counselors and behavioral health personnel, but that's not what this was sold as. This was sold as hiring cops. There's a big difference between a cop with a gun who can respond to a life and death emergency and a peer counselor. And there is no for cities, and this gets worse, there is no for cities any requirement that, hey, this much of the grant has to be spent towards a police officer versus a peer counselor or a behavioral health professional or whatever it might be. No, they can get the money and turn around and just hire peer counselors. Or as the Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs said, use it on emergency management. Any number of things. So that's part of the lie. Here's the other part. So it has this long list of things that you have to do to qualify for it. One of them is this. To qualify for a grant pursuant to this section, a law enforcement agency must have received funding from a sales and use tax authorized pursuant to Section 201 of this act before awarding the grant. Yeah, a city or county has to pass a special increase in the sales tax. So it's sort of like, you pass the tax, you put some funding in, we'll give you some funding as well. So the grant is contingent on increased taxes, which that wasn't the deal. That wasn't sold to anyone. It says the rate of the tax under this section would have to equal 0.1% of the selling price. Monies received from the tax imposed under this section must be expended for criminal justice purposes. So you've got to have this new tax that's funding criminal justice purposes very broadly, and then you can supplement that with this grant. It's nuts. And the other aspect of it, too, that I think is very important that the Criminal Justice Training Commission pointed out is that it requires applicants to comply with reporting and training programs that have not been implemented by the state. So in reading some of them, and again, it's a long list. I don't have a graphic for this, Nicole. I'm just going to read through it because there's just so much here. Where they said that to qualify for the grant. So it's this long list of things you have to do to qualify. So you have to issue and implement policies and practices consistent with the Office of the Attorney General's Keep Washington Working Act guide, which of course is the sanctuary policies. So you have to blatantly be in violation of federal law as a law enforcement agency to get this grant. You have to issue and implement policies and practices regarding use of force and de-escalation tactics. Again, tactics that are best practices, not necessarily even state law. 25% of your officers have to have completed the commission's 40-hour crisis intervention team training. And 100% of your officers have to be compliant with a requirement to complete trauma-informed, gender-based violence interviewing, investigation, response, and case review training. So what is this all about? Well, it's about helping out the Criminal Justice Training Commission. Money. But it's also about these grants only going to law enforcement agencies that are willing to abide by what the progressives want law enforcement to be. So what, like Seattle? Olympia? So unless you're doing every single thing the far left wants you to do as a law enforcement agency, not even stuff that you're required to do by state law, but their wish list of training and de-escalation and race-based, gender-based, whatever it is, you're not going to see a dime of this money. So, you know, anyone east of the Cascades, you can forget your community getting any of this grant money for additional law enforcement. This is nuts, you guys. And again, I will take full responsibility for it, for not having done this segment I'm doing right now 3 months ago. And I know that it's undergone some revisions. I don't know how it went under my radar. I'm kind of ashamed of it, to be honest. But now Bob Ferguson gets to trot out there, say he's fulfilled his chief campaign promise to fund law enforcement to make our communities less safe. 80% of the state will just believe that, the passive news consumers. And he'll get to hang his hat on that like he's pro-cop. And at the end of this, we might not even have a single new police officer funded with this money. It's just going to fund progressive wish list items again. I mean, what a slap in the face. And every time I think I can't possibly be more disappointed with him and disappointed with Democrats and progressives for their lying and their gaslighting, something like this. I mean, something we genuinely need that should be a nonpartisan issue. Like, we need more police officers. Things are not good right now. It's taken like 8-9 minutes in some areas to respond to life or death emergencies. Imagine being raped actively, getting a call off to 911. It takes them 9 minutes to respond. And now they want to act, Bob wants to act like he's helping fix that through this bill. When it doesn't do that at all, we're going to end up with a bunch of peer counselors who are peer counselors in gender-based violence interviewing. We're not going to end up with cops with guns and badges on the street saving lives. One of the most disgusting things that came out of this session, the lies that were perpetrated on this. Absolutely, absolutely unbelievable. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And I guess a good step on this would be to email Bob Ferguson's office and let him know that you know that this is not what he has been promising, that this is not $100 million for law enforcement officers. So you let him know that I know and that I told you and that you know and that you're going to tell your friends so they know too, so we don't let him get away with this. Gosh, these people just really grind my gears, as Peter Griffin would say. All right. I feel like that was unbelievable, but I do have a, I'll do a short unbelievable for you today. But first, have you taken the First Mark challenge yet? Well, you should, because you could be our next First Mark insurance victory. We call them victories because just by taking the First Mark challenge, that's a victory. Because you're going to walk away with maybe more information, a better understanding of your insurance needs, of the insurance you currently have, or you could walk away with new insurance and you're saving thousands of dollars. Our friend Brock Heward and his family use First Mark Insurance, and he said that having First Mark handle his family's insurance needs has been essential.
Yeah, you are technically their customer, but you will find this out when you make that call. They're your teammate right alongside with you, only wanting the best for you and rooting for the best for you and taking away all the stress and confusion that comes with this crazy insurance world.
Yeah, and the best thing for you might just be keeping the insurance you have. And I think that's the sign of an honest company. I've heard from undivided viewers and listeners who said, hey, I took the First Mark challenge and they told me actually I did a pretty good job and I have the insurance I need and they can't even beat the price. So they told me to keep it up. Isn't that the sign of an honest company? I love that so much. But on the other hand, for a lot of undivided viewers and listeners, they've walked away saving hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year, have better insurance and are paying less. That was certainly the case for Mike and I on our last renewal. And if we didn't have First Mark, man, we would be paying way more than we need to pay for our insurance. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, let's do a little mini edition of Unbelievable today. Okay, Libs of TikTok put this out, and it had to do with the state of Washington, so we thought we'd talk about it today. Libs of TikTok posted, sent to me by a follower, a political science class at Western Washington University is giving lessons about white supremacy and how Trump was able to mobilize both white supremacists and white identifiers. Higher education has become leftist political indoctrination. Defund. Western Washington University. They keep coming out. Isn't this the same university that did the cats? That brought in cats for students to calm students after Trump was elected?
No, I actually think that was Central.
Wait, which isn't this the one in Ellensburg? Oh, Western Washington is Bellingham.
That's Bellingham.
Okay. Yes. Central Washington is the one.
But Bellingham is Bellingham is a hippie school. I mean,
yes.
They have a whole Fairhaven department and all of it is pass fail. Like, you don't have to get
like
a grade.
The new Evergreen State College, right? Mm-hmm. It's just infuriating when you consider that everyone's money is going to fund this. Right. So there was this slide in this lesson, white identity politics. Oh my God. White supremacists, someone who believes in the inherent superiority of white people and or who holds positive views of white supremacist groups. And like, yeah, I mean, white supremacy is a thing. People do believe in that. And it's wrong, right? But so not breaking any news here. White identifier, a white person who feels a strong attachment to their racial group. Okay, here's the thing. Would that be considered a negative if it were a black person? Like, because you have like, what's the, like BET? You have like Black Entertainment Television.
Oh, you absolutely have, like, not. I mean, that no, is the if, whole BLM if, movement.
Right,
is being
if you feel a strong attachment to your racial group as a black person, that's like pride, right? But you can't have black pride. You can't have white pride. And it's like this weird, you know, they want us to believe that like white people aren't native to any place on earth. White people are always colonizers. White people have no culture. And the only people who can celebrate their skin color, their culture, their heritage are like black and brown people. Yeah. Isn't it just, it's just, it's obviously ridiculous, right? And then they talk about Trump here, racial hostility, animosity toward non-white groups. Okay, what about just generally racial hostility? Because there are black people who have hostility toward white people. There are black people who have hostility towards Asians. There are, I mean, you name it, there are Hispanic people who have hostility toward black people. I mean, there's racial hostility across the board. But this is only, oh no, it's just white people who hate non-white people. It says, white consciousness, attachment to white identity and a perception of disadvantage based on that identity. So there's not, you can't turn that around and say, first of all, I think far more black people have been taught to have a perception of disadvantage based on their identity than white people. But I do think that there are sometimes a lot of legitimate reasons for someone to feel like they have a disadvantage based on that identity. I absolutely believe for a long segment of this nation's history, you absolutely had a disadvantage if you were a black person in this country. That is undeniable. We've been trying very hard, I thought, to fix that. And we were on a pretty good path. And now you just want to take us backward. And now I also feel like there is, it's warranted for some white people to feel like their skin tone is a disadvantage, especially around the obsession with DEI. I mean, God, as a smart white kid, especially if you're a straight boy, you try getting a scholarship to an elite university. You're at the bottom of the list. In fact, they're just going to take your page and just fling it, burn it. Can't have a white cis boy in the classroom. And that's just true. In fact, I think the mayor of Chicago is under investigation by the federal government right now for coming out and talking about deprioritizing white people for hiring. It's just insane. And I mean, it definitely creates, so this creates two things. Because if you're at WWU in Bellingham, so for any black students who are in this class or students of color, if you will, it's going to put them further into that victim mentality mindset where they believe the system is out to get them. There's no amount of hard work that they can do, no amount of competency that they can achieve to be able to overcome the system putting them down. And then this is the kind of stuff that rises up the next generation of loony left progressives who are out protesting outside ICE detention facilities trying to get repeat criminal rapists to stay in the country. So it's like raising that next generation of Antifa. So I gotta agree with Libs of TikTok on this one. Defund, defund, defund.
And of course, Trump was able to mobilize
them. Yes, Trump. Oh yeah, where did I miss that one? Oh yes, Trump was able to mobilize both white supremacists and white identifiers. Okay. Not to mention that, like, he made large strides in the Hispanic and the black community, mm-hmm. especially among black men and Hispanics who are, despite what the left wants you to believe, actually have traditional values. So
beware if your kid wants to go to WWU.
Anywhere, really. At this point, don't even send him to college.
I know.
Like, let's wait a few years until we get this all figured out. Don't even send him to college. Trade school, fine. I always tell people, well, you're a journalist? You don't have to go to college for journalism. I wish I could get that $50,000 mm-hmm. a year back.
It's all who
that
you
would
know.
Be nice. Yeah.
It's all who you know in relationships and networking
yes.
and things
100%.
Like that. 100%.
Focus on
that, kids.
Being a hard worker, all of that. All right. Okay. No, I'm not on Ozempic. I know I look good, but I am on the East Side Weight Loss Clinic. What, Nicole? What?
Humble.
Yeah, I do look good. What do you want from me?
I don't know. It's not. You're not lying.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've been accused of being on Ozempic, but it's not Ozempic. It's the East Side Weight Loss Clinic. And I'm just happier and healthier and humble. What can I say? Down 43 pounds on the program. And everything is different when you feel good about yourself. Man, if you like me and you struggled with ups and downs your whole life, I've struggled with my weight my whole life. I've never kept weight off this long. I have never been at a healthy weight for as long as I have after doing the East Side Weight Loss Clinic program. And man, going on vacation, feeling good in everything you put on while on vacation, feeling confident in your bathing suit. There's just no food tastes as good as being fit feels. Is that not what I'm not supposed to say that? Okay. Please eat food. And no, the East Side Weight Loss Clinic program, to me, it's one of the healthiest programs that you can try because it's just about eating real healthy food, in the right portions to jumpstart your metabolism. And then they give you some healthy eating habits to be able to keep the weight off for life. It's not going to be the right program for every person. It's not a quick fix. And the first 60 days on the program is difficult. You do have to commit to it. But it'll give you some lifelong skills to be able to keep that weight off. I don't know. I feel like I botched that ad.
No,
you're looking at me
wonderful.
Like, Brandy, you're going to give people eating complexes and weight complexes. No, thank you. I appreciate it. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Anyway. All right. So Project Homecoming has commenced. And this is the effort to allow illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, to self-deport. And the government will help you. They'll help you. They'll help you with transportation, lodging. They'll get you from A to B. And I thought this was so sweet. They put out this video about it. And yeah, it's a little bit propaganda-y, but everything the government does. But it has the first 40 or 64 takers, 64 people who said, okay, you can self-deport. I mean, they had little stuffed animals there for the kids. I know it's a little propaganda-y, but I thought that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you know what? These people are doing what they need to do. Rather than get caught up in some ICE raid, they've got kids. They don't want to leave their kids behind. So they're taking their kids on a plane. They're going back to their home countries. And they get a $1,000 stipend. And more importantly than that, it preserves the possibility they can come back someday legally. So to me, that's a no-brainer. If you're really one of those people who, oh, I'm just came here to work and live and have a better life, this to me is the best outcome. I thought it was law and order and empathy. Perfect mix of both. You know, you guys are doing the right thing. You know, you're trying to make a wrong right. So we're going to give you what you need to get out of the country, $1,000 stipend, which is far less expensive than going through the deportation process for our country. So I'm fully in favor of that. And then one day, you know, you can come back to the United States legally. So I'm in support of it. Only 64 takers so far,
well,
though.
That was just on that just one, I guess. Okay. But I will say, I don't think that they factored in the marketing that they're doing for it, because those commercials are expensive, and
oh, yeah,
they are constant. So if you kind of divided what they're spending on the marketing of,
yeah,
of asking people to do this, then that
right
might change the math a little bit. But,
yeah, how much it's actually taking. But also, there's a lot of other positives with doing it this way. You're not putting ICE agents
for
at
sure
risk. You know, you're not
for
going
sure
out there executing warrants in the community. So there's a lot of other things where it's just like, hey, just leave.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it might cost our country something, but not near as much as it's costing our country,
yes,
right now.
I'm totally
to track
fine
these
with
people
it
down.
But the math,
you're right,
is a little,
I do wonder. I haven't seen one of the commercials yet.
Oh, the Christy Nome commercials?
Oh,
they're constant.
I've only seen the Christy Nome commercial that was like, get out of our country. It wasn't like,
but it, at
I didn't
the end,
see one about this.
It says, we'll pay for you to leave if you get out
okay
now. And like, yeah, no, it's a thing. And it's not just on Fox News.
Yeah.
It is on all of the networks.
Yeah.
And it's quite often.
Okay.
I see it.
All right. Christy Nome cracks,
you know,
me up.
I know. She's
DHS Barbie.
She's very pretty.
She
yes
is pretty. You know, mm-hmm, she got those fake teeth in Texas that she did that ad for that everybody freaked out over. You can tell.
She did an ad for the fake teeth.
Yeah,
too,
while she was the governor. She like did an ad for like some fake tooth company in Texas. And everybody's like, can you do that? It was very strange. Anyway, I thought that was nice. All right. FAFO. That is what is happening to a Democratic congresswoman, Representative LaMonica McIver. In case you forgot, she is the one who was outside that ICE detention facility in New Jersey, where she very clearly, she's in the red jacket for those of you watching, which makes it easy to see. Thank you, congresswoman, who very clearly pushed, assaulted law enforcement officers and tried to obstruct their work. Like, it was very obvious, right? So the United States Attorney for the District of New York put out a statement to Lena Haba. And you might recall, it wasn't just the congresswoman. The actual mayor of that town in New Jersey had been arrested that day as well. So I'm going to read this, but it sounds like between the lines that basically the U.S. Attorney's Office wanted an apology from them. It sounded like, if you apologize, basically, you know, we won't pursue charges, but you have to make this right. So it sounded like the mayor was willing to do that, but the congresswoman wasn't willing to do that. Again, I'm just reading between the lines. So now she's facing charges. This from the press release. After extensive consideration, we have agreed to dismiss Mayor Baraka's misdemeanor charge of trespass for the sake of moving forward. Representative LaMonica McIver assaulted, impeded, and interfered with law enforcement in violation of Title 18. that conduct cannot be overlooked by the chief federal law enforcement official in the state of New Jersey, and it is my constitutional obligation to ensure that our federal law enforcement is protected when executing their duties. I have persistently made efforts to address these issues without bringing criminal charges and have given Representative McIver every opportunity to come to a resolution, but she has unfortunately declined. No one is above the law, politicians or otherwise. It is the job of this office to uphold justice impartially, regardless of who you are. Now we will let the justice system work. So doesn't that kind of sound to you? And I bet this congresswoman loves it. I bet she loves it. Like, yeah, I want you to charge me criminally because I'm going to grandstand off of it. So it sounded like they tried to work something out. She didn't want to do that. So yeah, prosecutor. I don't care if she loves it or she's going to, you know, fundraise off of it. Put her. And the question is, for anybody else, I think, if they assaulted a federal immigration agent, you would definitely spend at least a little time in federal prison. I don't know if they'll do that to a member of Congress, but if you're saying that it's your job to uphold justice impartially, I'd be curious if whatever the outcome here is consistent with the outcome for other similar cases. All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll next, as well as questions, comments, and a wholesome closing sanity check for you.
Actually, we have a double dose of sanity.
Did you add one?
I did. Oh, it's great. God. It's going viral right now, and it's local, so it's great.
It's not Tim Iman?
No.
Because we started the show with that.
It's Patty.
Oh, Patty Murray?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. I like being surprised by a good sanity check. First, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is having another one of his live webinars this Thursday, 3:30 p.m., totally free to sign up. You can sign up at knowyourriskradio.com. He's going to be focusing on the tariffs and what's happening with our economy right now under the Trump administration. So if you've been worried, and look, it's understandable, if you're worried about the stock market, especially if you're getting close to retirement, like, hey, am I properly protected against the risk that's associated with Trump's tariff gamble? Zach can help you out with that. So sign up now, knowyourriskradio.com. In addition to talking about tariffs, they'll talk about a longer term outlook for 2025 and then a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, to give your retirement as much upside as possible. Hey, that's why they're up 8% on the year. So sign up for Zach's free webinar, Tariff Edition, this Thursday, May 22nd. Register now, knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, and again, a welcome to all of our new Patreon subscribers who are trying to help us reach our goal of 300 new paid subscribers over the next 30 days. We're well on our way, so we appreciate you guys signing up and taking the plunge, finally. Subscriber poll, is Washington Governor Bob Ferguson performing worse than expected, better than expected, or exactly as expected? Nicole.
I would say exactly.
Really?
Pretty much.
Okay. I disagree.
I didn't think he'd tank the state immediately because he wants to run again. It'll be this slow manipulation, and he'll trick everybody. And I mean, he's a smart guy. So.
See, but I disagree with that analysis because I think he is tanking the state immediately. I say he's performing worse than expected because I did not expect him in his first year to want to sign his name to some of these things.
Oh.
Remember me saying that I thought Democrats won't, you know, I was like, oh, they won't make him sign stuff like that in his first year. But turns out they hate him too.
Oh, I think they're taking advantage of all the bodies they have there.
Oh,
on their
100%.
Side. And so they were like, we got to do it. And I don't think they like him that much.
No, I don't.
So they're making it, they don't care.
He's always been disliked among Democrats. In political circles. He doesn't have a good person-to-person reputation, and that's always been true. He comes across as very, like, you know, likable at some of these, like, events, but it's all a facade, and so a lot of people see through that.
Yeah.
But I guess when I say my answer being worse than expected, I thought he would, in his first year, truly moderate himself. But he signed the fringiest fringy things could have signed. Rent control, pay for striking workers, upending parental rights, and in a couple hours, the largest tax increase in state history in a few months on the job.
I don't think he can help himself.
Gosh, yeah, I didn't. Most people agree with you. Exactly. I guess you guys are smarter than me. Exactly how you expected. You
were just more hopeful.
How it would play. No, it wasn't that I believed that he was a moderate.
Mm-hmm.
It's I believed he'd play the game. I believed if he was playing the long game, he wouldn't go to these depths so quickly.
I don't think he's scared. I don't think he's scared.
Well, who's
going to
beat him?
Yeah.
No one's going to beat him.
Nope.
Okay.
Except as me.
I mean, Doria always called him the most dangerous politician.
Yeah. And he knows he feels safe. Mm-hmm. I think he'll keep that job as long as he wants it. All right. Let's see. Pamela just responded with, God help us. Yeah, that's how I feel. Harold, I had rock bottom expectations. He's lived down to all of them. Rock bottom. He's lived down to, I like that, all of them, and started digging deeper. Good comment, Harold. Gail, it will take decades for the pendulum to swing back toward the middle, but only if people wake up. I agree. Big Swan, no surprises. He's just as bad as we'd expected. Travis, I held hopes after the election that Governor Ferguson was going to do good things for Washington, but after seeing his current behavior, I have to say he is behaving exactly as I expected him to prior to the election. He's just falling in line with the rest of the Dems in Olympia. I wish that Dave had won. He's who I voted for after all. Yeah, I wish he'd won too. Angela, I was honestly hopeful for him to be truly moderate as he claimed to be. Yeah. Leslie, same thing. I let myself be hopeful, but inside I knew Ferguson was the most dangerous politician ever in Washington State, completely bought and paid for. Let's take a couple from locals. Gabriel, he's a Democrat, a true believer of the party, especially the most leftist expression, expressed nothing in his past behavior indicated otherwise. He is a detriment for Washington, but seemingly it is what a majority of Washington wants or think they want or been told to think they want by the media. Annette, just because I voted as expected doesn't mean he's doing good for the state. Yeah, your expectations can be low and it can still meet those expectations. So I agree with all of that. All right. So let's get to comments. You know, let's do one sanity check and then come back to comments.
Okay.
And do another sanity check. Is that okay?
Sure.
Why don't you go ahead.
I put a little thing in there for you.
Oh, okay. All right. Got it. Okay.
So sanity.
Go ahead. Okay. Calls out Murray for letting Americans down. You want to set it up for us?
Well, there's a hearing today, okay. And Patty Murray was questioning RFK Jr., and he took this opportunity to point out something about her.
And I also want to point out...
I have just 2 minutes left. I asked you a specific question.
I want to point out something, Senator. You've presided here, I think, for 32 years. You presided over the destruction of the health of the American people.
Well, I am.
Our people are now the sickest people in the world.
Seriously.
Because you have not done your job.
Seriously. That is an amazing...
What have you done about it? What have you done about the epidemic of chronic disease?
Mr. Secretary,
what have you done about the epidemic of chronic disease?
Seriously, Madam
Secretary, I would ask you to hold back and let the Senator ask the questions.
Oh my God, he hates her. Because remember last week we played They Got in a Tit for Tat, where she was using a cancer patient from Bainbridge Island, Washington, as a political pawn, saying, oh, she's going to die if you keep doing these cuts. And then he looked into her case and is like, that's not true at all. So we already called her out to her face in a last hearing for lying and using a cancer patient as a pawn. So I think he's fed up. Good one. Good catch, Nicole. Wow.
And it's true.
Good stuff.
It's all these people saying, oh, we're a mess. And who's been messing it up?
Yeah. And also, she can't answer that. What have you done? Mom in tennis shoes?
Nothing.
To help improve the health of the American people. Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. All right, some comments. Catherine Smith, Tim standing behind his good friend Bob. What a hoot. Matt, as hilarious as Tim Iman is, it does show a gap in security. How was he able to get there? So if you've never been into the governor's office, you can walk right in to the lobby area. And the area where they do press conferences is immediately off to the left. It's just one door. And so there are always a couple state troopers in the lobby area. But on these bill signing days, it's chaos in there because you have these massive groups that are coming in for bill signings or whatever the issue is. So as long as you can sort of just, and it is a security gap, 100%. I'm actually very surprised that given, I mean, everybody knows what Tim Iman it looks like. But there was a few people you could see if you like watch the video back. There's a woman who comes up and she's like trying to, she notices him right away. She's like, what do I do? I'm surprised that they didn't remove him.
But that would have been a scene.
Already a scene.
I know.
But if I were Bob Ferguson and the role was reversed and I had someone who like genuinely hated me and I'm the governor standing behind me, I would kind of be concerned. Not that Tim Iman's a violent, dangerous person, But I would, if I were the governor in that circumstance, I'd be like, get him out of here. This is ridiculous.
Like, you what's know, he going to do would. Behind me? Especially right over the shoulder.
Right.
Wow.
So absolutely, Matt, I agree with you. That's a gap in security. And I imagine they won't be as freewheeling because of that for future bill signings.
Oh, we're almost done. Last day.
But for next year. Old Sub Sailor, $5 super chat. The Dems want an electorate that is dumb, compliant, and completely dependent on the government. The perfect mix for a socialist communist state. Exactly. Denny Waterbury. Wow, that's such a fancy name. Mm. Waterbury. It's like a duke. It's like the name of a duke, yeah. You know? The Duke of Waterbury. If you have the ability to homeschool your children, they are no longer safe in this state with their policies and laws. Yeah, I agree. I know it's hard, though. Kathy, this should be illegal. Government does not raise children. Parents who care will not allow this, but look around. There are a lot of parents who seem not to care. I agree, but also there's a lot of parents pulling their kids from school. Enrollment is way down, and homeschooling and private schooling is way up. And so, you know, what happens every time a parent decides to pull their kid? It's 20,000 plus gone just like that per pupil. And so they lose money, and that's when they come back and beg for taxes. The key is going to be when they start asking for more money in these bonds. Remember, they just got all this additional authority to raise school bonds. So you still have to vote on them, but they can pass them at higher rates. So the key is you just have to reject every one. You have to reject every single one until they stop what they're doing. Cody's PNW adventure. I can tell you on behalf of the majority of public school staff outside of administration and teachers, we strongly oppose this. You got to speak up. Let's see. Baron, unless and until we show up to these protests and push back against this narrative, we are lost. Any means necessary is their mantra. Gloves off now. I thought I heard in the background of that bill signing shouting in the hallway. Did you hear that?
I did not notice it.
Yeah, but I thought it like faint. So I wonder if there were some protesters outside while he was doing that.
Yeah.
Eric Bath with a $20 super chat. The problem is it doesn't help how much you write and protest. The Democrats will call you homophobic, Nazi, and nothing will change until this state hits rock bottom, just like the drug addicted. We are at rock bottom. We've been at rock bottom for a couple years now. Papa Woody. I stopped by. It was so funny. Somebody sent me a nice email saying, hey, just a heads up. I think that this person's like trying to troll you a la Bart Simpson with the Papa Woody. I'm like, oh, no, I know. I'm aware. Thank you, though. I stopped by to buy fishing and hunting license a year ago, or I stopped buying fishing and hunting licenses a year ago because Washington State is so corrupt. Yeah, they just up the cost of hunting, fishing, and your Discover Pass. Tina Marshall, I noticed that Sheriff Sanders was standing in the crowd with Bob Ferguson, standing next to Monica Dingra while he signed this police bill. I wonder what Sheriff Sanders thinks of this bill. Can you reach out to him for his perspective? Yes, I will do that. Yes. I noticed that as well. Mm-hmm. Spokane Valley Girl, allowing strikers to collect unemployment is just one more reason for businesses to leave the state. I foresee large increases in unemployment taxes for next year, particularly for those industries that are notorious for strikes. And also, this literally means that those businesses, because businesses pay into the unemployment insurance benefit fund, they'll have to pay into the fund for their workers to go on strike. They have to pay into that fund so their workers can go on strike. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely nuts. All right, good comments
Wild.
Today, per the usual, always. Well, look at this. We got two sanity checks. Thank you, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Let's get to our closing sanity check. You know, as much as we sometimes despise the legacy media, especially the ones that cover the White House, they're just humans, you know? They're humans, they're mothers and daughters and parents. And today was Bring Your Child to Work Day at the White House. So the children of the White House correspondents were there to ask some hard-hitting questions.
What's the president's favorite order at McDonald's?
President's favorite order at McDonald's. He loves McDonald's hamburgers and french fries. Who doesn't? They're good.
Right. How wholesome is that? A nice wholesome sanity check to close the show today. That has been your closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Help us reach our goal of adding 300 paid subscribers over the next 30 days, and I'll shut up about it. You know, as soon as we hit 300, I'll shut up about it. I know there's a lot of freeloaders out there still. Costs money to put the show on, pay staff, do all that. So we would love to have your support, $5 a month, so we can keep doing this. UndividedPod.com, or no, go to patreon.com/undivided. Patreon.com/undivided. And then use the promo code 300. Number 300, you get 30% off your first year. I think that's a pretty killer deal. It's a couple cents an episode, you know? All right, we'll see you tomorrow.